I'm gonna call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. First item of business is to identify the wonderful person who provided the donuts. It is our committee administrator, Amanda Rudolph, so thank you, Amanda.
Happy Thursday.
So the first official item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Is there anyone who would like to move approval? Representative Vogel, I think, would like to move approval of the minutes. Okay, any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Is Representative Sundin here? I've not seen him. I did see Representative Dabney, though. Would you like to go first? Chair Dabney. So I will move that House File 40, no, that's the wrong one. I will move that House File 365 be referred to the General Register.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
House File 365 deals with public safety regulations regarding diabetics who rely on insulin to manage their blood sugar and their driving privileges. Currently, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety collects private medical data on all Minnesota drivers with diabetes who take insulin. It then does nothing with that data. Again, it does nothing with the private medical information that it collects on Minnesota drivers. This data is collected at a minimum of every 4 years and can be collected more frequently than that, filed away and never looked at again. House File 365 proposes a narrow repeal of the rule related to insulin-dependent diabetic drivers, leaving the broader administrative rule governing loss of consciousness, which historically has been the concern regarding insulin-dependent diabetics and drivers, or loss of control while driving in place. In short, House File 365 proposes that DPS oversight of drivers be based on the driver's behavior, not their medical history. The sonar for this rule, to go to the issues that this committee would be particularly concerned about, Mr. Chair, was last updated in 1991. The management of blood sugar for insulin-dependent diabetics has changed dramatically in those 29 years. DPS's regulations and rules have not. Intrusion in the private lives of Minnesotans should be limited to times of concrete evidence of actual risk when driving. And this rule no longer reflects that. Mr. Chair, with me today is Mr. Leo Christensen, a constituent who would like to share his personal experience with this rule.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Leo Christensen. I'm a private citizen, but I have consulted with the American Diabetes Association, both the local office in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, as well as the national office in Washington, the Washington area. When the original law was passed in the 1960s, insulin for human diabetics was made in cows and pigs. It's now made in laboratories using human RNA, and in fact, this is what insulin looks like now. Portable, easily used, very predictable, very stable. If you remember the early days, if you knew anybody, you'd have to have everything in a refrigerator all the time. I'm a backpacker camper. This can be out of refrigeration for 30 days now. That's how stable the medication has become. A big advancement for people like me. Made my life a lot better. In addition, in the 1960s, in order to know if your blood sugar was way out of control, you actually urinated on litmus paper to determine if there was an acid effect, which meant you were already in ketoacidosis. Now I took my blood sugar this morning when I got up, just like a lot of diabetics do, found out I was in the normal range. I get real-time information, not in whether my diabetes has advanced so far I'm really quite sick, but what's my real-time blood sugar at that moment so that I can take the right amount of insulin to be healthy. So it's just the advances have been fantastic and made my life a lot better. Since the state law was passed in the late 60s, neither the State Patrol or the Department of Public Safety has ever collected data to determine if diabetics cause accidents at a higher rate than the general driving population. There's literally no collected data. By the way, there's almost no data nationally on this as well. So there really has never really been an indication that diabetics do cause accidents at a higher rate than the general population. Probably have the same issues driving that everybody else has, positive and negative. The other thing is that if there was a concern about safety, really modern medical technology has solved this concern. The quality of insulin, the ease of blood glucose meters. I literally buy my test strips on Amazon. I mean, that's how readily available these items are for people. In addition, I've worked with people at Driver Vehicle Services, very professional organization. I've had a very good experience with them, and they also support the change. They believe it's a use of state resources that provides very little benefit to the state or to the driving population, and they would also support sunsetting this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Is there anyone else who would like to testify to House File 365? Seeing none, is there any member discussion? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney. I'm really glad, as a type 2 diabetic, to hear this, and my dad will be very glad, too. At 83, he still drives coach bus and has not had to use insulin, and it was quite a battle when he had a quadruple bypass when they told him they were going to give him insulin, and he just, no. And I'm not going to tell you all the details of the fight that ensued because they were going to give him insulin, but they finally agreed that once he left the hospital, he would not use it, and he has not continued. I mean, he's just continued on his way. I do think I'm going to have to after eating these donuts. Thank you, Amanda. my blood sugar was really good this morning. But I just really appreciate it because several folks that I know have brought up the fact that they have to be so, you know, every year it's saying, you know, I'm okay to drive. I haven't had any incidents. You know, everything's under control. And I really appreciate it because we are keeping our blood sugar levels under control. And it's not as crazy as it used to be. So thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Any additional member discussion? Okay, any closing remarks, Representative Dabney?
It's a good bill. Vote for it.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 365 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you both.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Representative Sundin, you have House File 4413. I will move House File 4413 be referred to the Judiciary Committee. Welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Freeberg. House File 4433 is an agency bill coming from the Department of Labor and Industry. There's been a streamlining of information here. There's a new information platform that's coming online, and I have the department here to explain some of the details as it pertains to government functions.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kate Berger, and I'm an attorney in the Office of General Counsel at the Department of Labor and Industry. This bill adopts the amendments related to workers' compensation, each of which were discussed and unanimously approved by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, consisting of labor and business members in meetings throughout the fall and in January. Most of the amendments are related to related to the Workers' Compensation Modernization Program, now called CAMPUS. CAMPUS will replace the mostly paper-based workers' comp imaging system that's been in effect for about 25 years, more than 25 years, with a system in which reports of work injuries will be filed electronically with the commissioner. So starting on page 17, line 17.15 of the bill, I'll draw your attention to section 13, which amends subdivision 5 of 176.231 related to reports filed in the new CAMPUS system. The existing paragraphs B, C, and D were previously enacted to require work comp insurers and self-insured employers to file initial and subsequent reports of injury with the commissioner electronically using a national reporting standard and corresponding Minnesota implementation guide as of August 31st, 2020, so coming up. Paragraph C is amended to reflect that the Minnesota implementation guide will include requirements for service of the reports on injured workers consistent with existing Minnesota law. And paragraph D, starting on line 18.6, is amended to authorize the commissioner to use expedited rulemaking to amend or repeal rules that conflict with the electronic reporting requirements. This is needed because the existing work comp rules require insurers to file most reports on paper using prescribed paper forms. and therefore will be outdated when the electronic reporting requirements in campus go live on August 31st. So the amendment authorizes the commissioner to update the existing rules to reflect the new requirements by using expedited procedures in section 14.388, which is the good cause exemption rulemaking process, and which can be used to incorporate specific changes set forth in applicable statutes when no interpretation of the law is required, or to use section 14.3985, which governs the process for the repeal of obsolete rules. Both of these rulemaking provisions require notice to affected persons who may submit comments and review and approval by an administrative law judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify regarding House File 4413? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to member discussion, if we have any. No obligation. Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Sundin?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. This is a product of a lot of bipartisan work at the Workman's Comp Advisory Council, and appreciate your support.
Okay. Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4413 be referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Your bill is on its way. Members, also, I'm going to stick with Representative Tabke's not here yet. I'm going to stick with the order in the agenda. Representative Kunesh Padin is home with a sick family member, so I agreed to present the bill for her bill for her. So I'm going to hand the gavel off to Vice Chair Sauk.
Chair Freiberg, go ahead and introduce the bill when you're...
Sure. I would move that House File 1513 be referred to the General Register. House File 1513, we heard it in the local government subcommittee. It changes the way that the amounts that cities may spend on charter commissions is calculated, effectively raising the amount for some cities. They've been unchanged for many years. They were set in 1907 and only changed twice since then. They are intended to reduce the reliance of charter commissions on city councils for their funding, ensuring that charter commissions receive at least some amount of compensation for their work. So it amends a statute that sets the amount of expenditures on charter commissions at $10,000 for first-class cities and $1,500 for all others. The proposed cap would have cities pay the greater of 0.0007 of the city's current certified general property tax levy, or $1,500, but no more than $20,000 in a year. So it's just updating some numbers to account for inflation, and it was pretty straightforward in the local government subcommittee. Oh, yeah. Is there an amendment also?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes. So I would like to move the A1 amendment, which just corrects a number.
Any question? All those in favor of adding the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Go ahead with the assumption of the addition of the amendment.
Yeah, and I don't have any testifiers. I believe the League of Minnesota Cities is here if any questions come up, or I might rely on Ms. Dyson also.
Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. I think there's someone from a first-class city that maybe could, I'd like to find out what their position is on that, and then what would the specific impact be to that city.
Okay. Identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam or Mr. Chair. Heather Corcoran, legislative policy analyst with the City of Rochester. We have not taken a position on this bill. Charter commissions are separate from the city, and so that's our
Representative Quam.
To the author, I thought that this would have a financial impact of the city. When I looked, in Rochester recently became a city of the first class, and an increase of the fee, and I'm just trying to understand what the justification of maybe increasing what Rochester or any of the other cities might be paying and what they might be getting from it. That's sort of what I'm curious about on this bill.
I guess thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said, the amounts were, this is just to kind of account for inflation and so forth. These amounts have not been changed in many, many years. So this is a straightforward increase.
Representative Quam.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Rochester hasn't had this for many, many years, being a city of the first class. And so it would be a change in just a very few years. And I will talk to the author when she returns and try and better understand some of the implementation. I know that their city's been Duluth, Minneapolis, St. Paul, who have been, this is a normal part of their budget. And so I'm just trying to understand. It might be obscure, but it could be a pretty hefty bump to some municipalities. I was hoping to have details, but I understand why not.
Mr. Chair, for cities of the first class, the amount is raised from $10,000 to $20,000. That's the specific number that's in the bill.
Doubling.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the pinch-hitting author, your amendment, or the amendment, was that reflective of just a drafting error, or did they decide to drop a couple zeros because it didn't create enough cash? Or because, I mean, we all do math. That's a significant difference. 0.007 is vastly different than 0.7 or 0.07.
Mr. Chair.
Chair.
Yeah, I would turn to Ms. Dyson on this, but I guess I actually think they're equal because the amendment changed it to 0.07%. So less than 1%. 1% would be 0.01. Yeah. So, but Ms. Dyson can confirm my math. It's been a while for me.
So anybody who's responding? Oh, okay. Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg, I don't know that it's a drafting error. The bill was introduced with 0.0007. It missed the word percent, but the Senate had amended it to 0.07%. And the amendment brings it in alignment with the Senate language. Right. It does make a difference in how many cities fall under any one of the categories. Based on the paid 2019 certified levies, 105 of the 107 home rule charter cities would now have an expense cap of $20,000 using that calculation. And before it was 17 cities total with only some of those being home rule charters. So it changes the range, but whether or not it was an error or not, I can't speak to that.
But,
Chair Freiberg?
For further clarification, though, the amendment, though, doesn't change the amount number of cities. It just puts the percentage in a proper notation. Do I have that correct?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg, because it changes the number, it affects the number of cities that are eligible under the different caps, whether it's 0.07% or the $20,000 total maximum. So it does change the number of cities eligible under either the caps, but that may have been the original intent. I don't know.
Representative Nash, did anything left of that question? Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I think it's really important to give additional funding to the charters. And in some cases, the charters may be at odds with the city council. So it is important that the Charter Commission has enough money to do the job it's supposed to do. And at one point, Egan had a Charter Commission, and as I recall, it was, and eventually was folded because they could never get enough money to fulfill their mission.
Are there any other comments or questions from the committee? If there are none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 I guess, just to be clear, I'll renew my
renew the motion
that House File 1513, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
Thank you. Okay. With that renewal, then, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Freiberg. Next up is Representative Mason, or no, Tabke, okay. Got to find the right sheet of paper here.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Tabke. You have House File 2296. I will move to refer House File 2296 to the General Register. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I am proud to present House File 2296 to you today. This is a really important bill for cities and communities across the state of Minnesota. So for decades, cities have been funding infrastructure work and making sure that they have adequate amount of funds to do the major infrastructure and street work that gets done in all cities. And from that time, any cities have developed in different manners and have different ways of growing. And so what we're talking about today is a fee that has been in place and used for decades by many cities across the state. And so with that, in 2018, there was a Supreme Court ruling that decided that the cities did not have the statutory authority to actually be using infrastructure street fees in their communities. And so that everyone previous to that had thought that there was significant statutory authority to do that. And so what we're trying to do today is to fix that, to make sure that communities have the statutory authority to charge infrastructure fees, because we very much believe that growth should pay for itself. That growth, residential growth, commercial growth, should be paying for itself, and that should not be a burden on current taxpayers. And so what the bill does is it allows cities that are statutory cities, charter cities, are already able to do what they would like to do with regard to these types of fees. But for statutory cities will be able to charge an infrastructure fee. And so if there are infrastructure needs, if a turn lane needs to get put in, if a street light needs to get put in as a direct result of this development that is being built, then it allows cities to charge money to those folks. This is primarily occurring in residential areas, but we'll be able to charge a fee for that development. And so it could be something that's necessary in 2 years as development continues to grow in an area. It could be something that's multiple years down the road. But it is something that is a direct result of new development. And so we very much believe, again, that growth should pay for growth. And so I'd like to turn everyone's attention to a couple places in the bill. So if we look at the 2296, first lines 1.7 through 1.10 here. So this street impact fee, in addition to all other existing authority of a municipality, a municipality may impose a fee as set by ordinance on an applicant based on the net buildable acreage of the subdivision, the subdivision's impact on the municipality's transportation system, or the municipality's transportation plan. And so all this does is say that we can, that cities can charge a fee if they have to for transportation purposes. And so then if we look at lines 2.3 to 2.6, this work has to be directly impacted by that development. And so there has to be a nexus for this fee to apply. And so there must be, and again, 2.3 to 2.6, there must be an essential nexus between the fees imposed under subdivision 12 and the municipal purpose sought to be achieved by the fee. The fee must bear a rough proportionality to the need created by the proposed subdivision or development. And so, members, this is a fee that is charged because of development, so growth should pay for itself in our communities, and so this is allowing that to happen. Currently, what is happening, and by not allowing the statutory authority to move forward, if this doesn't happen to fix this law and allow cities to continue, cities that have previously used street impact fees will have a direct resulting tax increase on property taxes in each of these communities. And so, because right now cities have been, again, for decades using this fee, and now there's a giant hole in their infrastructure, ability to pay for infrastructure in their communities. And so because of this ruling and the not having the statutory authority that cities thought that they had, they will therefore have to be forced to have increased property taxes on everyone across the community in order to pay for this, these infrastructure needs. So, Mr. Chair, we have a couple testifiers, and would love to proceed at your choice.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Tabke. This, just for members' awareness, this bill was discussed fairly extensively in the local government subcommittee, and we had several testifiers, including a couple who've signed up again to testify here. My intention is to give everyone an opportunity to testify, but I think I may limit the time to 2 minutes a little more on this one, since it has already been discussed in the other committee, and I want to make sure members have time for discussion as well. So, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Irene Gao. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. As many of you know, the League is a membership organization of cities statewide, and so of our 853 cities across the state, 833 cities are members. I want to thank Representative Tapie for authoring this bill, and he did a really nice job of explaining the situation that we're in now. I just want to highlight one particular thing in the decision that the Minnesota Supreme Court case talked about. So in that case, it was Harstad versus the city of Woodbury. And so what was found was there wasn't statutory authority to be charging a fee for future street improvements. And what that means is that when in our growing communities, where it's largely, for example, like farmland, we can't always guarantee when that development is going to come in. And while we currently can require developers to improve the street at the time that they're developing, what we want to ensure is that it is fair, that they're not paying for the full freight. That first developer who comes in isn't paying for all of that, for example, turn lane. And instead, that fee is spread across the incoming development. And that's why it's important to be able to make that improvement at the time it's needed instead of immediately. The only other thing I wanted to point out to respect the time limit is that members received a handout that came out. Sometimes this issue gets pegged as maybe just an issue in the metro. It actually is beyond that. And so a number of cities have adopted resolutions supporting this bill. Currently, we have 25 cities who have, or 25 local governments who have adopted such a resolution. And as you can see from the map, there it's a wide range of cities. Cities including Cambridge, all the way to Worthington, all the way to Rushford. So know that it's not just a metro area issue. The last thing is I want to emphasize what Representative Tabke said. The legislature is in a unique place to fix this problem. The court had said that there wasn't any statutory authority, and so you're in the place to be able to fix it. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
1 minute and 55 seconds. Nicely done, Ms. Gao. Thank you for your testimony. I have a Carl Christian Johansson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Carl Christian Johansson, and I am a staff attorney with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill and the committee. Townships really aren't one of the first groups that, or municipalities that come into mind when looking at these street impact fees, but they're necessary and they're often used when developers come in and traffic increases. They need extra turn lanes and extra traffic control devices. townships on average are already 75% property tax dependent, and they are already supporting much of the road budget through those property taxes. Without these fees, towns are asking taxpayers to essentially subsidize the developers as they come into the community. And if you're the and that is unfair, really. And then some may ask that to use a special assessment instead on that development and tax the property owners or assess the property owners that move into the development, and that would be unpopular, difficult, and unfair to do so. Townships need these fees to support their safe road system, and when developments come in, these costs are inevitable, and everyone knows it, and so we're just looking to collect these in the most efficient and convenient way. You're really assessing one entity or a few entities that are involved in this project, and so we ask for your support on House File 2296 and the communities that will benefit from it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johansson. Also, 1 minute and 45 seconds. Very nicely done. I have Tim McNeil on the list. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and
Thank
proceed
you
with
much.
Your testimony.
I'm Tim McNeil. I'm the mayor of the city of Dayton. Dayton is one of the top two growth cities for the last 3 years running. Thank you, Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Representative Tapke, for authoring this bill. According to the Star Tribune last week, the Twin Cities is one of the hottest markets in the country. As I mentioned, Dayton is one of the top 2 3 years running, and the evidence by this article is that sales are market driven, which is 100% the case. We are finding that our fees are less than 4% of the cost of the houses, and the majority of the cost is land, which in Dayton has risen from $10,000 an acre to over $70,000 an acre in the last 6 years. There's a misunderstanding that just because the developers are able to cut costs on their end, that they actually do. We have a case where very close to the legislation, we were sued by a developer who was able to cut $800,000 off the cost of his development because of the transportation fees, but he did not cut the cost of his lots at all to any of his builders. At that exact same development, within a half mile of that development, we put in a safety improvement to the cost of $1.4 million that the developer therefore did not participate in. So given that, you know, there's a variety of statistics I can, you know, tell you about the city of Dayton, but I'm asking that you correct what I can only assume is an oversight in the original authoring of the legislation many years ago, because this logic uses the exact same logic as parks, surface water management, drinking water, and sewage. With that, I can stand for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Mayor McNeil. I have Heather Corcoran from the City of Rochester.
Hi again, committee. Chair Freiberg, my name is Heather Corcoran. I'm the legislative policy analyst for the City of Rochester. Our council member, Mark Bilderbeck, who some of you heard from in the subcommittee, is unable to be here today, so I'll be reading his testimony and pinch hitting for him. Thank you to Representative Tapke for offering this bill and to the chair for hearing it. I want to share how this bill would help our community as it relates to infrastructure development fees to fund municipal street improvements. Our city council recently passed a resolution, among the other cities that you heard from, supporting this resolution, this legislation. After the court decisions that were mentioned previously, the city is left in a holding pattern. This current situation has created uncertainty, which makes it very hard for deals to be conducted and development to occur. Not allowing cities to have equitable ways to share infrastructure costs across a broader area will limit development. In fact, we are in the process of declining an annexation because we don't have an equitable way to distribute infrastructure costs that are needed to support and mitigate the impact of development. Cities are left in the inevitable position of denying development due to a lack of public facilities, forcing certain property owners to pay a disproportionate share of the costs, while later parcels to develop get a free or reduced costs ride, or require existing residents to shoulder the cost. Without this legislation, property taxpayers will likely need to pick up the cost of this infrastructure. And while Rochester has a large commercial tax base to share this increase in property taxes, cities that are bedroom communities would presumably be in a much harder situation. In summary, the uncertainty that now exists as a result of the court challenges on this topic make it very unlikely that development could be stymied, which is not what any of the stakeholders involved in housing or community development would want to see happen. Thank you for your time.
Yep. Thank you, Ms. Corcoran. I have Peter Coyle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Coyle. I'm here today on behalf of Housing First, which is a statewide housing construction and development organization. But I also represent in my private practice commercial and industrial developers and multifamily developers throughout the state of Minnesota. So my comments reflect that experience as well. Minnesota law already allows cities to collect fees to require developers to install public infrastructure where they can demonstrate that it's needed. So the statement that there's not authority in Minnesota law today to require that, respectfully, is incorrect. Secondly, those of you who serve on city government know that as part of new development, development agreements are typically required. Having reviewed hundreds of those development agreements for my clients, I can assure you that when a city identifies a public infrastructure improvement, including a street improvement, that is necessary to support that project, the developer pays 100% of that project cost. We've heard several rationales advanced for why this legislation is necessary, but the fact is, under Chapter 462 of Minnesota law, that authority exists today. Secondly, development agreements are often used to compel the payment of these fees. And thirdly, if a city actually identifies a need that has a broader basis of justification, they can use their special assessment authority, which already exists in law. And in that way, they have to demonstrate a constitutional connection between the improvement and the project that's needed to be funded. So respectfully, Mr. Chair and members, we would urge your opposition to this legislation. We think it's unnecessary. It's an unfair tax on housing, which is already too expensive in this state, as the documents across the country demonstrate. And this would be one more burden that we think is unnecessary. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. I would have let you go for a little longer, actually, since you're presenting a different perspective, but you were right at 2 minutes.
I got
more to say. No, that's okay. No, I appreciate your brevity. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2296? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to member discussion. I have two members on the list. First is Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tapke, you and I had the had a relationship prior to both of us getting here. We were both mayors at the same time. I in Waconia, you in Shakopee. And, you know, I remember having breakfast a couple times, and we talked about the relationship of the city with our neighbors, the people that live there. And, you know, that's a pretty important thing, that we send the message that we're resident friendly and that we respect our neighbors. And, you know, I was just struck by this because when I was in Waconia, we talked about streets and how to build them, and we talked about what was the best pathway forward, and we did assessments. I'm sure you did too. And we actually even debated the assessment policy as to whether we wanted to assess everybody in the city to create a pool of money, or we wanted to assess the people that were on that street that were improving. And we did talk about it in a number of work sessions, and ultimately we decided to stay with the assessment policy that we had, which was to have it impact the people who were on that road. We obviously heard from the public, as we always do when you decide to do some sort of infrastructure project. But I still maintain that was the best way forward. And the reason for that is, under your model, you could do this tax fee, and somebody who was there when you started it may never actually benefit from it, because you said that it could be well down the road. That's my principal concern with this, is because if we'll just pick a mythical street in Shakopee, you know, somebody who lives at 123 Main Street in Shakopee, you may do this fee that you're trying to get passed, and statistically, people live in their homes for 7 years, and then they move away. So you might charge them for this and do the road project 9 years down the road. I think we could agree that that's a possibility. So they're going to pay for it, but they will have derived no benefit from it. That's a problem. That is a huge problem. And when you think about that and you realize that your special assessments that you already have to assess the people that live on that street at that time, whether it, or use that street, whether it be a business or a resident, that's fair. And they can come and face you. They can come and sit in city council chambers, and they can address you and say, hey, I have a problem with this. And we have methodologies for them to address the situations that they're in, whether they're on a corner and they want to make an appeal to how you assess their lot. This does none of that. This actually says, we're going to tap you on the shoulder and say, here's your bill, but you may never actually get to benefit from the project that we do. And I'm presuming that you would agree with that, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out, this is a scenario that you would agree that what I've said so far is accurate?
Representative Tabke?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, no, I would not agree that that is accurate. The scenario that you're putting forward, I would agree with you, absolutely could happen. But what you are arguing is it is not that city's choice as to how things move forward, as well as it's not the homeowner's choice as to how it would move forward. Everyone has the freedom and opportunity to decide if they want to move into a development, and it is that understanding that they can do that if they would like to. And so growth, as I said before, in my opinion, very firmly, growth should pay for itself. And as we are developing and as communities are building out, there are infrastructure needs that are definitely necessary and critical for that growth. And so generally, these kinds of things are not something that would take 9 years. That will be an anomaly of how these things would go, as you know how Waconia is building out and how Shakopee and how many communities across the state of Minnesota are building out. This is not how this would be used. It would be a relatively quick. It would be used within generally, I would say, 18 to 24 months type of thing is when those infrastructure needs will arise as developments are happening. You are 100% correct that there are some times when it could take longer. If we hit a recession or if something else happens, absolutely, it could take a longer time, and that first homeowner may not experience the benefit. But however, they created the need for it and contributed to the need for it, which I think is a fair way to move forward, which is what our bill allows cities to choose and homeowners to choose how they like to move forward.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we're going to disagree there, and then you're probably not surprised by that. But, you know, I will use the example that was in Waconia before I came onto the city council. There was a development that was built. Infrastructure was pulled out to it. It was all ready to go. Then the housing crisis hit. Some of the people that were there had houses that were up and built, and they were living in them. Then there were other houses that hadn't yet been built. Those people, under your model, would be paying for a huge portion of this before the rest of the folks actually showed up. So that's going to be disproportionately penalizing them for choosing to live in a development. You know, this is a pretty heavily litigated concept, and it's being used in other states, and one of them was California. And you know, it's not often that I digest things from UCal Berkeley, and then you can figure out why. But the UCal Berkeley study that came out in August 7 of 2019, their concluding paragraph said, At a time of tremendous need for housing, any policy that impacts the delivery of new homes must be examined in a thoughtful manner with an eye towards maximizing utility for all stakeholders. Goes on to say that that their work and their studies show that this is not really beneficial. This is not respectful to the homeowner. This is not going to impart the thing that you want to have happen. And you know, I just go back to coming on to the city council when I did. We had a problem on our hands. We had developments that were not being moved into. We had infrastructure that we had put in the ground. I inherited a heck of a mess when I came onto the council, and then was when I was elected mayor later. The approach that we took was pro-resident, pro-business, be friendly, attract people, cut taxes, cut spending, and it worked. I mean, it's incontrovertible that Waconia is booming. This, I think, would have really slowed that down. And I just think that if you go back to the concept of these are the people that you want to be your neighbors, that you'll see at a soccer game or a church or in a grocery store, this sends a horrible message. And at a time where we're trying to get people into homes to create, as you've heard me call in the past, that North Star moment where you can come back and you always have that place to go when you're a kid leaving, or you've got that constancy as a homeowner, and it creates stability, this is going to add a lot of cost. And that concept is borne out by UCal Berkeley. So I'm going to write him a thank you note for helping me make my point. But Representative Tabke, this is just an awful idea. And it's going to get litigated. And I'm not even sure it's gone anywhere in the Senate, so that's comforting. Again, it's not often I say thank God for the Senate, but thank God for the Senate. I think what you're doing is you're going to add a lot of costs where people have no redress. They're not going to have a way to say that I'm opposed to this. But you as a former mayor, and I as a former mayor, and people who used to be on city councils here, you already have that tool. You can say, we're going to assess, right? You're going to assess, and we can come up with a pool of money to do these infrastructure projects that you can either assess people on the road, or you can decide, and we didn't, but you could have decided to assess the entire city for infrastructure projects. This takes that out of, this takes the accountability away for elected officials. And in my opinion, doesn't give the resident a lot of redress in this. So I'm deeply, deeply concerned about that. Mr. Chair, I know that we're short on time. We got stuff to do. I do want to address one issue, though, as to the destination of this bill. So it's being referred to, I believe, the General Register. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, this is clearly a taxing issue. We've been talking about taxes and. What is it? Chapter 645.44, subdivision 19, talks about fees and taxes, and that's going to have to stop along the way in the tax committee. So I'm going to make a motion to refer this to the tax committee rather than to the general register. And
all right. So are you making that?
I am, and I'm going to ask for a roll.
I believe the proper motion would be to move to amend the motion.
Yep, I'm going to make a motion to amend where it's directed to taxes and ask for a roll call.
Okay. Representative Nash has moved to amend the motion. I mean, I don't know if you have thoughts on the that amendment. I guess I will just point out that this, I don't see that as necessary. The tax committee chair has not requested this bill from me. It does modify Chapter 462 of the Minnesota statutes, which deals with local government. It was heard in the local government subcommittee. So I will not be supporting the motion.
And respectfully, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Well, sure. Let me just let Representative Tabke go, then I'll call on you again before the vote.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So you went through a lot there, Representative Nash.
I may have.
And I always appreciate our conversations, and whether we agree or disagree on issues, it's always great to talk to you, as we did while we were both mayor at the same time. So with that, I find it surprising that you will take the stance that communities who use this are not caring about their residents, not caring about their businesses, not caring about what happens, because in those communities and what costs are. This is one way that many communities are paying for their growth. And again, this is not a tax. This is very clearly a fee as set out in all statutes and all all ways. So this A, by the tax chair and the property tax chair, does not need to go to taxes. So that's that piece. But this is also the first co-author on this is Representative Albright. And so Representative Albright very clearly disagrees with you. This is moving through the Senate, and will Senator Pratt is moving it through the Senate. And so this is moving forward that direction, and all indications that it will be successful there, as I hope it is here in the House. But I hope that everyone will vote against this amendment, because it is not a this is not a tax, and neither the tax nor the property tax chair would like to see this. Okay.
Before I call on you, Representative Nash, I guess I would just like to say too that there's something about this bill that causes members to have a lot to say. In the local government subcommittee, Representative Hertas gave a really impressive soliloquy that went on for about 20 minutes. It was very articulate, very well put together. But you know, in a committee of limited time, I guess I would just ask members to and bill authors to keep their comments fairly brief here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could start off. Subdivision 19 says fee and tax. A, tax means any fee, charge, exaction, or assessment. So Representative Tapke just said this is a fee. This chapter of law says fees are part of a tax, so that should go to the tax. So if you'd like to ignore that, I'm more than happy to continue my soliloquy if you would like. You can judge whether mine was more articulate than Representative Hertas's or not. But clearly, the chapter of law says fees and taxes go hand in hand and should go to the tax committee. So your choice, Mr. Chair. I think that that's a pretty straightforward. And if Representative Tapke thinks that this is such a slam dunk, one more stop isn't going to adversely affect things. And I would say that while Representative Albright is a friend of mine, he and I vehemently disagree on this one, and I am not Representative Albright.
Okay. The motion is to amend the motion to refer this to the tax committee. Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Sock? No. Representative Quam?
Aye, aye.
Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Gomez?
No.
Representative Heinrich?
Yes.
Representative Kegel?
No.
Representative Lehman? Representative Lee?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Tice?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. Next member
but
I have
Mr.
on the
chair, before I finish, if I'm going to ask
Nash.
For a roll call on this bill as well.
Okay. Representative Nash has requested a roll call on the bill. Representative Mason.
Thank you. This obviously is a controversial bill, and I'm going to ask a question both maybe to Representative Tapke and Peter Coyle.
Hey, Mr. Coyle, if
and,
you could come back.
Going back to the Supreme Court ruling that the city's infrastructure fee programs were outside the authority, and I think you had mentioned that the cities do have been implementing various agreements so that we get the money up front. I mean, and I served on the Eagan City Council. I mean, you're not going to get your city to support, in most cases, to support paying for new development. Most people would like to stay the way they are. So there's very few new developments that you're going to get a lot of public support for if it's going to be impacting the current residents. So again, if the Supreme Court said it's the cities were lacking the authority, and this bill is giving the cities the authority that they thought they had, essentially. What, I guess I don't understand the argument here.
Mr. Coyle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, thank you for your question. My firm represented the landowner in Woodbury, so I'm quite familiar with the circumstances of that case. But I would remind the committee and respectfully Representative Mason that this issue cropped up about 20 years ago involving a City of Eagan road impact fee, which the Supreme Court also invalidated, essentially on the same facts. With respect to Woodbury, in that case, the developer had agreed to pay for all the public infrastructure necessary for his single-family development, which was in the millions of dollars. That included street improvements, sewer and water improvements, park dedication fees, and the like. The city added to that a $1.3 million fee, approximately $7,000 per housing unit as a tax, and that fee was going to go into a city fund for a project that was not defined, that had no certainty of being installed, and the landowner had no recourse if the city did not use the funds in a manner that related to any transportation improvements. But what was clear on the record was that there was no connection between the fee imposed by the city in that case and any specific project that the development was implicating. And so that's why the Supreme Court invalidated it, because it effectively became a tax on housing in that case, which was unlawful and unconstitutional.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Representative Mason?
Well, according to the way I'm reading this bill, there has to be a connection to how it's going to be, the money is going to be spent. I think it's subdivision 13.
Did you want additional comment, Representative Mason, or?
No, that's, well, I'm just responding to what he said. There is a connection. Mm-hmm. This bill says there has to be a connection.
Yep, all right, thank you, Representative Mason.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Coyle. I do have five members who are now on the list to come. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, being new here, it's amazing to me all the different terminology we use for essentially taxing people, whether it's an insurance premium, a fee, or a tax. We saw that debate during the Obamacare debate as well at the national level. I guess I agree with Representative Nash. There are multiple different tools that are already used for funding. Most cities fund their transportation needs with something other than this fee, using property tax revenue, special assessments, state transportation aid, creating special service districts, TIF, property tax rebates, local option sales tax. I just don't see a need for this. It seems like there's lots of different things at the city's disposal already. Representative Tabke, I'm concerned about the possibility of this bill limiting housing development and driving up the cost for families. How could this negatively impact affordable housing, Representative Tabke?
Representative Tabke.
I'm sorry, what was that question? Representative.
I'm concerned about the possibility of this bill, should it pass, limiting housing development, as we've heard from Ms. Corcoran and others, the possibility of limiting housing development and driving up costs. How, in your mind, is there any way this bill could impact affordable housing in a negative way?
Representative Tabke.
Well, for your question, what we've got here is that there is currently, as Ms. Corcoran discussed, there is currently significant amount of uncertainty within the development community, within municipal community, and through those areas about what can and can't be done. We spent all summer long meeting with Housing First, trying to find solutions for this, and nothing could really be completely identified. And as we were working through that process, the City of Dayton put together a resolution in their city, and they thought was working with what everybody wanted to see happen. And as we were going through that process, they were immediately sued for what they did by Housing First. And so what will happen if we aren't able to fix the statutory authority is that there will be a direct property tax increase in all of these communities to pay for the infrastructure that's necessary because of the growth. So by not doing the statutory fix, it will cause all housing to become housing, and especially on commercial properties, to have more property tax on them. So that's the only way, because growth has to pay for itself, and it has to be paid for somewhere. As we both know, it just doesn't come out of thin air. And so this will result in a direct property tax increase, making housing less affordable.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I'll wrap up. Thanks for that response, Representative Tapke. I'm concerned that this will actually impact affordable housing in a negative way. You did mention Housing First Minnesota meeting with them. They're on the list of people that oppose this bill. Minnesota Chamber of Commerce opposes this bill. Grocers Association, National Federation of Independent Business, Commercial Real Estate Development Association, Jewish Community Relations Council, Minnesota Shopping Centers Association, Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, Building and Owners and Managers Association, BOMA, Housing First Minnesota, Minnesota Association of Realtors. If this is so good and it's going to bring down the cost of housing and this issue that we've been dealing with in affordable housing in our state, I don't see why these groups oppose your bill, Representative Tapke. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Tapke. As the minority lead on housing, this is really concerning to me. We hear over and over again, how are we going to have affordable housing? Quite frankly, I think it's extinct for many reasons. Several weeks ago, I had the opportunity to be on a panel at the Minnesota Housing Partnership Breakfast, and one of the things we talked about was affordable housing. And in fact, the majority leader said his brother is a builder and had said that the comment that his brother had made to him was that with all the costs of the land and the fees, they can only build expensive homes. We can't even build affordable housing. And how do we get to affordable housing? I truly don't think we will anymore. I think we've got to come up with other things. A friend of mine in the Sartell area put up an apartment building that was not meant to be senior housing, but his fees before he put a shovel to the ground were over $1 million. Turns out he was able to build it, and what he found is that it was very attractive to seniors. We need more opportunities like that, but $1 million for a permit? Holy smokes, that's a lot. And being in the building industry, when I heard that only 4% of the fee or the cost of the home goes to fees, that's like on a $3,000 home, that's only $1,200. I have a hard time with that one. I have a hard time believing that that's it. And to hear that growth has to pay for growth, I think it goes both ways. If cities want to grow, if they want to include having more people come, having, you know, different housing so that maybe we can find some homes for people to move up in, it's going to get tougher and tougher. People aren't going to leave. They just can't. We see a lot of the seniors staying in their homes because they can't afford to go anywhere else. And I think we're going to be very stagnant. We need to have, oh my gosh, what is it, like 30,000 homes in not many years. We're not going to make it. We're just not going to make it because everything we do is affects the cost of the homes. And believe me, I understand what cities are going through. We're requiring them to update facilities they haven't even finished paying for yet. We can't do that, and that's why we're seeing this. I believe growth is super important, especially for our affordable housing. We need to grow so that folks can go from their first to their second to their third to wherever they're going to go for retirement, but we can't afford to do it. A patio home. My husband and I are looking at patio homes because someday I hope to retire and do that. But holy cow, $300,000 for not very big patio home. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And we're not going to make it if we continue to do this. It has to be a partnership. We need to quit pitting cities against developers, developers against cities. We need to quit doing this and figure out how are we going to keep things affordable. And I don't see this happening with this bill. And I disagree. I think it is a tax. I really do. We just have to take a step back and say, what is our goal? And affordable housing and new housing is just not one of them. I really don't see it. And I'm just really frustrated. And I checked, and Senator Pratt introduced his bill almost a year ago, and it's still sitting there. It hasn't had a hearing yet, which tells me something. I'm just really sad, and it really hits me because as much as we fight for affordable housing, I just don't see it happening anymore. And what do we do? What do we do? What do we do with our homeless? What do we do with all this? And I'm sure the city sympathizes well. They don't know how to do it, and that's why they're reaching out with things like this. So I think it's more of a bigger picture. I think we need to look all the way around and what costs are we imposing on housing, and whether it's single family, it's apartment complexes, whether it's commercial, we need to look at this, because in the end, I understand the whole idea of not raising property taxes on existing, but the new folks are going to be paying property taxes too. Mm-hmm. And part of that, part of these costs that are being charged to start the developments will go towards that. It's not like they go unmet. The charges are met. They're filed into whatever happens to make sure that everything is paid for. But at some point, we need to step back and say, what is really the best for our communities, and how do we also encourage housing? And that's the end of my spiel. Thank you.
Okay. I think it came from the author herself. It was more of a spiel than something requesting a response.
Yeah.
So I will go to Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, we can call this a fee, but it really is a tax. And you know what? It's the worst kind of tax, because this tax is going into somebody's mortgage. When they buy that home, they're paying for this fee. Developers aren't paying for it, because developers are passing along the fee. And granted, maybe in the short term, the developers might make a little more until the market catches up with this. But the bottom line, any fee that's paid, whether it's a SAC, a WAC, this, it's being paid by the homeowner. So what you're doing is you're putting a fee, but you're also putting that fee into their mortgage, because it's going into the price of the home. I do have a few specific questions. Representative Tapke, on line 110, it refers to, or the municipality's transportation plan. So this could be used in that transportation plan. Is that citywide?
Representative Tapke.
Representative Vogel, what do you mean, is that citywide? I'm not understanding your question.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're both familiar with Prior Lake. Mm-hmm. And Prior Lake is kind of a dividing line, right? People north don't go south as much. So if I built a house on the north side of Prior Lake and it was part of the transportation plan to do something on the south side of Prior Lake, is there any possibility that the tax that's being paid for the house on the north side could be used on the south side?
Representative Tapke.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel. If you look at line 2.3 and 2.4, there has to be an essential nexus between the fee imposed and the municipal purpose. And so that's where that is. There has to be a nexus to use this fee.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for going there. That was my next question. What is an essential nexus and a rough proportionality?
Representative Tapke.
Essential nexus is that it has to be connected and directly responsible. This infrastructure needs to be connected and directly responsible for the infrastructure. This growth has to be directly responsible for the infrastructure need. So a great example is Spring Lake Township, which you and I are both familiar with. They definitely want to add more houses and grow so that we can have more houses in our community, as well as making sure that they are building to the densities that they want to build to for all of our communities. And so in order to do that, they have to have a turn lane to be installed, which is not within the developments. It has to have a turn lane. And so they are currently not developing, which means that we are not adding more houses to our area, those areas which causes all housing to be less affordable. And so with that nexus is that turn lane has an essential nexus to the development. And so if that costs $1 million, or we'll say $500,000 to do that, and there are multiple developers in there, everyone pays their own share of that turn lane that has to go in. So that's the rough proportionality and the nexus to the development.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So let's go back to my initial question. Is there any possibility under this statute proposed that money that was paid by somebody living north of the lake in Prior Lake could possibly ever be used for something south of Prior Lake, in the south part of Prior Lake? Is there any possibility that could happen relative to this?
Representative Tapke?
Again, no, unless there is a nexus that is an essential nexus that is proclaimed for that. That won't be able to happen in your scenario or any other community scenario. They have to be connected developments. I'm not sure what you're getting at with that.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm getting at is I don't see a definition for essential nexus or rough proportionality in this statute. So therefore, to me, unless they're someplace else, they're subjective terms that could be used as this thing goes on to do other things. Another question I do have, though, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Tapke, do you see a value with new residents moving into a community?
Representative Tapke.
Yes.
Thank you for the brief answer, Representative Tapke. We'll Representative Vogel.
Trying to keep on point. So if there is a value for a new resident coming in, and I assume you would agree with me that the new residents coming in probably pay proportionately higher real estate tax than the residents that are there because the new homes are more expensive than the old homes. When you look at your essential nexus, are you taking into account the relative value of those new residents coming in so that you're not just looking singly at what can we get out of them for their lot price, but what are they adding to the value of our city so that we're taking that into account as we figure out how much we should be charging them for this citywide fee?
Representative Tapke.
Any city can, this is permissive. No city has to use this type of fee in their community development. So if they would like to use it, if they would like not to use it, then they just don't use it and they pay for it in other ways. If they would like to use it, they have the option of growth paying for itself. And that is what this provides.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's exactly what I'm getting at here. Is if we're going to look at growth paying for itself, then we have to look at the value that the growth is adding to the city. I remember many years ago being in the Lakeville area and looking at people wanting restaurants, wanting grocery stores, wanting different things. They weren't there because there wasn't enough rooftops. The rooftops came. Now those people that were living there, as well as the new people, enjoy that. There's a value to people moving into communities. And I think if we're going to just say that, yes, we're going to charge them a fee for all these new streets that we're putting in citywide relative to some incremental thing that they're adding to the city, then I think we have to take into account, and this bill should take into account, the value of those people coming in that are adding to the city itself, whether it's new tax revenue because they're paying higher property taxes, whether it's increasing demand for things that people want. I think you're being unfair to people by having them put into a mortgage a fee that they're paying up front, going to pay over 30 years, and not giving them full credit for what they're adding to your city. That wasn't a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Well, I do have three people left on the list. I mean, we do have the room a little bit longer if this goes over, but I would prefer that we end the committee on time if possible, and there's 12 minutes left, and we do have one more bill. So, Representative Elkins, you're next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Try to keep this as brief as I can, but thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Nash for the shout-out to my alma mater, though I have to say that in those days I was one of a dozen members of College Republicans. A lot happened. I'd like to second the chair's kudos to Representative Hertas in local government because his soliloquy really was eloquent. He was, I thought, spot on, actually. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the what is the appropriate use for assessments, because in Bloomington, where I was a city council member for 9 years, we used a street assessment to cover upgrades, reconstructions on local residential streets. And in that context, it was perfectly appropriate. In our case, the city charged 25% of the cost to an assessment, and the rest was borne by the city's property taxpayers at large. But when you're talking about a local residential street which is lined with homes, a fair way to apportion the cost of doing that would be, you know, basically on each home's front footage, because all of the homes on that street are directly benefiting. So I think that's an example of a perfectly appropriate use of assessments. But and the other thing that we'll observe is that, as numerous testifiers have mentioned today, that when a developer builds a housing development, they are in fact responsible for building all of the infrastructure within the development, the streets, the local last mile sewer connections, all of those things. Nobody's disputing that. But if you take a typical new suburban housing development where you're converting corn fields to housing, you don't just have to build the streets in the sewers within the development. There have to be city collector streets, local municipal level sewer lines that connect that housing development to the larger transportation infrastructure services for the region at large. And the question is, who is going to pay for the upgrade of the collector street that connects that development to the larger network? Who is going to pay for the larger sewer connections? And right now, there is no mechanism for cities to recover the cost of building the infrastructure needed to connect that housing development to the broader networks, and that's the issue. If we're going to talk about the Woodbury Harstead decision, what the court said is that under current state law, there is no mechanism that cities can use legally under current statute to recover those costs. The court didn't say that it's a bad idea for the cities to be able to recover those costs. They just said current state law doesn't allow it, which is why Representative Tabke is bringing this bill before us. So the question is, what is the fairest way to recover the costs of expanding collector streets, arterial streets, higher level sewer lines that connect to the regional network? And this is a good way to do that. This is what this is for, because in the absence of cities being able to directly recover the costs, these costs, as part of the development process, is that cities don't want to raise the property taxes for their residents, their voters at large to cover these things. That's political suicide. And so what's happening instead is the cities are restricting the supply of land. They're raising other fees to compensate for their inability to do these fees. And it would be a lot more efficient in the process. There would be a lot less risk involved if we just allowed cities, gave them the authority in statutory law, just to be able to assess these fees that are occasioned by the development on a fair basis. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a clarification on a former statement. We have this room until 12:30, is that correct?
We do.
And we do have the availability of, a room tonight if we need to, because apparently there is a lot of, concern on this bill. I want to clarify a couple of things. One, I believe the vast majority of our municipalities are wonderful. They are doing a great job, but it has become evident that the courts think that there might be some bad actors. And if somebody added $1 million above in fees when the entity said, hey, we will build this, and they already agreed to take care of the costs, and they want an extra $100 million, that's not a trivial thing to ignore. So when we do legislation, it's important that we are very diligent about different items. Now, in an earlier interchange, there was discussion about could funds be used for a different project. And looking at 111 through 114, that if there, the payments are put into a special fund, and I'm assuming that there's not a special fund per street. Could the author clarify, is that a special fund per street or for city transportation plans?
Representative Tabke.
As I understand it, is not a fund per street. It is a fund where this money goes into, and it is, as all cities do, a fantastic job of auditing and making sure that money is going in the right places, and it's a transparent process.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author, because I read the same thing, that it goes into a fund. for stuff that's related to or based on a municipality's approved transportation plan. So it's commingled between a lot of these different projects. And what if a street's put in and it's often there's just a development on one side or, you know, a portion, and years later they add additional, you know, properties. So the original entity, when they're paying for this, what proportionality of the total cost would that original entity be paying if they're the only one that currently is submitting for a plan for, you know, for that street?
Representative Tapke.
As the bill states, it's a rough proportionality to the infrastructure costs as this, as it is defined when that development is going in. So it is, if they expect their development to be a quarter of the future development that has a direct nexus to that infrastructure need, then it'll be roughly a quarter of that cost.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the author point to me exactly where it delineates that it'll be precisely proportional? I'm just trying for clarity to understand, because oftentimes you'll see rules or interpretations with that was the our opinion of the legislative intent, so we must be very prudent in being clear in the language. So if the author could just point me to where that is delineated clearly so that it's perfectly understood that it's exactly proportional.
Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, line 2.5, the fee must bear a rough proportionality to the need created.
Representative Quam.
Okay, need created, is that the existing need or some possible future need? As we discussed, you're putting in a new street, and what if the determination when they saw the need and proportionality, 5 years later, a Costco comes in, or some other large development, and you know the proportionality of this first development is much smaller. Would there be a refund to that entity?
Representative Tapke.
Representative Quam, there is not a refund in the bill. No.
Representative Quam.
Okay, so essentially, the first one in is made sure to pay for that. There's no guarantee. And I'm assuming the municipality, when a new group comes in, there would be some assessment or fee that would help cover some of the transportation stuff. And it just seems as if once you commingle it, I'm not sure they have the resolution of calculating. And it would be, I think, fair if, 5 years down the line, there was an over or an abundance of fees collected. We never seem to have surpluses, but I guess we do, at least from time to time. And it'd be nice to have some of that proportionality implied on the gen. So I think there needs to be more fleshing out of this. For a while in the earlier discussion, I thought I was back in the early part of this century, you know, during Pawlenty and other administrations, fee tax, you know, there's a lot of debate on that. And frankly, I always summed it up as it's government collecting money from someone. And when I think of who's where are the experts on government collecting money, it'd be the tax committee. And there may be details of which they would be aware of that members of this committee might not, since they're doing it quite more frequently in more detail. So I guess I'm disappointed that we didn't send it, because I would really like to have this addressed in such a fashion that we don't come back in a couple years because of another court case, because we didn't thoroughly address it and do it in a complete fashion. And you know, that's where some of my ill at ease comes, because I personally can trust my local government. I can be comfortable. But when I'm sitting here, I have to worry about what are the possible iterations, interpretations, and implementations of a statute. And while I do understand your intent and what you're trying to do and the usefulness it might have, I think that this short bill doesn't get into the intricacies required to constrain possible misconceptions, unintended consequences, or the very rare but ever-present bad actors. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a, kind of a few comments. So, just to start out with a question. So you talk about the, this mostly being used for, you know, new developments and subdivisions. And so, you know, representing an urban area, we don't really have those. But you're talking about something that's sort of geographically remote from, like, current sort of infrastructure, maybe. Like it's new infrastructure, especially for this, like, subdivision that is being planned. Is that, and which is mostly, to Representative Vogel's point, like, home ownership opportunities. Is that true?
Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, that is generally true, but not necessarily true.
Right.
So if in your district there is a big, a large apartment complex that goes in, which requires infrastructure needs to be adjusted for, if street needs to be adjusted because of, as a direct impact of that apartment building going in, if there's a street light that needs to go in or something like that, this would allow the city of Minneapolis to have that developer pay for its own growth, which required a street light.
Thank you.
Representative Gomez.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, just kind of like, again, Representative Vogel talked about this, the fees associated with this being incorporated into the mortgages of people who ultimately ended up living in the development or subdivision. And, you know, absent this, we have this list from this kind of consortium of groups of things that they say that they're like, oh, these are ways that that local governments already have to fund these transportation projects. So, like, if you're adding this cost to the general property tax levy, then everybody's paying for it, right? People who don't live in the subdivision, people who will never use the infrastructure, people who are not directly benefiting from it. So I kind of just object to the idea that this would make housing less affordable overall, because, you know, most of the people who are in affordable housing, most of our cost burden communities are living in rental housing. Most rental housing does not have a subsidy. It's sort of naturally occurring affordable housing. And we know that property tax increases get passed on to renters via rent increases. We also know that homeowners, through our property tax refund system, which is sort of like our way to introduce some progressivity and income sensitivity to what is otherwise, you know, as reflected in the Suits Index in our tax incidence study that gets put out by the Department of Revenue, property taxes are considered a relatively regressive tax. So we have a property tax refund that introduces that income sensitivity on the back end. The issue is that the income qualification limits for homeowners are twice as generous as they are for renters. So if you're a renter and you make $62,000 a year, you don't qualify for any property tax relief, even though those increases in the levy are most likely added to your rent. If you're a homeowner, the income limit is double. And so when you make it so that when you add a cost to the general property tax levy, rather than putting it on a group of directly of homeowners who directly benefit from the cost of the infrastructure, then I would argue that that is actually more detrimental to affordable housing, given that difference in the property tax refund for renters and homeowners. The other thing is, again, like, you know, if you go down this list of, oh, these are the ways that
local governments have to fund local transportation projects. Again, it's like the property tax, general property tax, like everybody pays that, whether, you know, whether they benefit from it or not. Special assessments, I believe, are done. You can't assess a group of homeowners that don't exist yet. So I don't know exactly how that would work to pay for these fees. State transportation aid, right, is like, it's not that the state transportation aid would be increased because of this increased cost due to this development. It's that you would have to forego another transportation project in order to pay for this. And as we know, our transportation is massively underfunded. We get a D minus across the board, and we're refusing to have the political courage to actually fund our infrastructure needs at the state of Minnesota. And so we're putting that onto our local municipalities. Special service districts are like businesses agree to pay for some upgrades. I personally have never seen a special service district pay for a big transportation project. I think that would be like a big burden on them. Tax increment financing. It removes certain properties from the property tax rolls, which again shifts the burden that would be paid by that development that gets TIF onto the rest of the property tax base. And again, we can go through the issues with renters versus homeowners when you're shifting more cost onto that property tax levy. A local option sales tax is our most regressive tax option. It hits low-income families the hardest. So I guess all of which is to say that, if individuals are making a decision to, like, move into a new subdivision, if developers are building a new subdivision, that they should kick in some of the cost to the public of building the infrastructure to support that. And I think that that is, like, a fair scheme, personally. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tadpi. And thank you also, Representative Tadpi, for the language in lines 2.3 through to 2.6. I know that's a really good clarification, and I really appreciate that. My questions are actually primarily for the mayor, if he is still available.
Which mayor? Yes. Welcome back. Mayor McNeil.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tadke and Mayor McNeil. So I know that this is an issue. You and I have had conversation about this that you're very passionate about, and I know that you have some similarities with some of the communities that I represent as well.
Yes.
So I just wanted to ask a series of questions to you. Sure. To kind of get an understanding of how this impacts you directly. And what this would mean to your community. Do you have a great number of folks living in your community or in your city that have been raising their families in that community for quite some time?
Mayor McNeil.
Yes, I'm personally a sixth generation resident of Dayton. I got elected mostly because my family members voted for me. We have a lot of cousins in that area that have been there for six generations. There's a lot of families that have been there for well over their entire lifetimes.
Okay. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, thank you for that. And do many of the residents who live in Dayton live there because of the availability of that existing affordable housing?
Yes. The city of Dayton was founded before the state became a state. We have many homes that are over 100 years old, but a huge amount that are over 60 years old.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, and if we were to not have these fees, as I know you had a project in your district or in your city already that had this issue,
yes.
If the way to pay for that difference is that it raises the property taxes of other folks in your community who are living in those affordable housing units, would this they're paying this for those new homes that are coming in? Would some of your residents in your city still be able to afford to stay in your community, or might this be an incentive for them to leave because they could no longer afford?
Yes,
Mayor McNeil.
That's an extremely important question. So our community currently has a higher tax rate than our neighboring communities, mostly because 91% of our community is residential.
all the industry is in our surrounding communities. So we have a tax rate of 53% right now. Our surrounding communities are in the 40s and 30s. The project that I referenced earlier in my testimony, which is a $1.4 million project, if we were to pay that off in 1 year in ad valorem property taxes, that would raise our property tax rate by 800 basis points, so going from 53% to 61%. And our surrounding communities would be a third of that. There's no question that we would lose affordable housing.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And fourthly, I know there's been some discussion about some of the things that get added to having new development in the city. But I have to ask, in your city, if the taxpayers would be required to pay for this new infrastructure, mm-hmm. would they be more likely or less likely to support adding those additional housing units in your community?
I'm already getting a huge amount of pressure because of the traffic that we currently have. I have been asked many times why we have to pass approve these housing projects that are going in. Our residents, many of them enjoy the rural character, and what we've told them is that the trade-off of losing your rural character is that you get lower taxes. The result of this will you lose your rural character, you lose your ability to transport, you know, your transportation freedom, because your transportation is clogged up, and your taxes go up. It's not a tenable situation.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate all of that and how that directly impacts your community. So, I mean, I guess where I'm going with this is really this, that it feels a little bit like we're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Absolutely.
And we have folks who are living in your city and residing there and have been there for a very long time because of the ability to live there at a reasonable rate, to have affordable housing, to raise their families, to raise their kids, that kind of thing. And by choosing to not have these fees, we're essentially, what we're doing is we're talking about paying for or putting the burden or the expense of new housing on existing taxpayers. And to be really upfront with you, while it'd be nice to have restaurants or a local drive-through in your neighborhood, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm going to ask you this, Mr. Mayor. If your residents had a choice between having a McDonald's or a restaurant down the street or having more affordable property taxes so they could afford to live in their house, what would your residents choose?
We have this conversation on a regular basis. There's no question that anything I present to them, I ask, would you be willing to raise your taxes for this, that, or the other thing, parks, roads, whatever? The answer is always no. The answer is always no. And I will also point out that we are in a moratorium right now because we had to make the rational choice as to how do we proceed, knowing that we no longer have the ability to charge these transportation fees. And it was a rational choice to say we're going to slow down housing, not increase it.
Yeah. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. I really appreciate you bringing this down a little bit more to the level of how this impacts your community directly. I'm really grateful for that, and thank you for the work that you do.
And I'd be more than happy to speak with any of the members one-on-one at any time. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cagle.
Representative Bonner covered most of my questions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Nash, you had a brief follow-up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to point out, Representative Tabke was asked by Representative Vogel if people north or south of a lake were going to pay or use this money to cover things in north or the south of the lake, and he said no. And then when Representative Quam was asking him the same question, he said that quite possibly, yes, it would be put into a transportation fund that could be used in other places along the city. So that's a fairly glaring incongruency, and just thought, you know, I would be recalcitrant in my old debating skills if I didn't point that out, that it's not exactly an accurate statement from one question to the next. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Yeah, one thing I just wanted to point out, because there was some discussion about the phrase essential nexus that's used on 2.3. Honestly, I'm kind of surprised to see that, because the word essential is pretty strong language. I mean, just, you know, thinking back to my con law days and stuff, you know, it reminds me of word phrases like strict scrutiny or narrowly tailored. I mean, whenever you use those sorts of phrases, courts have a tendency to strike down the law in question. So to me, that's a pretty strong standard for cities to have to meet. So I don't have any. Representative Vogel, I opened the box, hey. So I'll let you follow up.
How is roughly determined in the law?
Yeah, that one is less clear, but I, you know, it still has to meet the, I would say it still has to meet the threshold of there being an essential nexus, which is a pretty strong standard, I would think. So, Representative Quam, I guess I set myself up for this.
One of the points being this area of law has had great attention and litigation. And from the debate, it's pretty obvious there are multiple viewpoints of how this could be interpreted. And that is at the crux of my ill-at-ease of, you know, are we doing something that is going to end up in the courts shortly? Or are we going to take a breath, maybe do some additional work in the committee that, you know, is really used to handling government taking people's money? And the intricacies, and I think that is more of the sum of, as opposed to any, I like your intent of trying to solve a problem. Let's just do due diligence. Sorry about that.
Thank you. No further members on the list. Any closing remarks, Representative Tabke?
Yeah, thank you very much, everyone, for a robust and great debate on what we've been going through here. This is solving what I think is a pretty simple problem. But Representative Quam, as you have mentioned, I am open and willing to talk about any amendments and any discussion that will further clarify what happens here. There are obviously we worked on this since Representative Tice pointed out, we've been working on this for well over a year and have gotten to a place where many folks agree that this is a good way to go forward. All legislation is obviously open for litigation at any point, and we're doing our best job to put this forward with as much clarity as possible. So I look forward to working with you on identifying any areas that we can further clarify. So I appreciate everyone's support.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2296 be re-referred to the General Register. There was a roll call requested. So the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Sock.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Nine. No.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Kegel.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
No.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion is approved. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, Representative Lehman. So you have House File 3804, would you, and it's going to the General Register, would you like to make that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion for House File 3804. Would that be a motion to send it to the General Register?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Representative Lehman moves House File 3804 to the General Register. Please present your bill.
Okay, well, thank you. You're all going to be happy to know that there'll be no questions. This is totally non-controversial. A nice end. This is just simply a request between Itasca County, the county I represent, and Harris Township to attach a piece of unorganized property to Harris Township. And you have in your packet a pretty clear explanation by just looking at the map. This is a little peninsula that juts out onto Lake Pekegama. And for some reason that nobody is quite clear on, the straight line, as you know, townships are kind of boxes. And the box was drawn and cutting off the end of the peninsula. Now, by a petition of 20 voters, we could go through a process to attach that. Unfortunately, there's not 20 voters that live at the end of this peninsula. So the township and the county have agreed jointly, you see letters and resolutions in your handouts, to attach this unorganized piece of property to Harris Township. Harris Township has been spending money to
plow the roads to take care of this point, and they really shouldn't be because it's not part of their township. Yesterday in Chair Mason's subcommittee, I had the county and the township. I didn't think they needed to stay for a second testimony. So that's really the essence of this bill.
Okay. Is there anyone who would like to testify on House File 3804? Okay, seeing none, is there any member discussion? Okay. Seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Lehman?
No, I thank you for your attention at the end of this long meeting, and I'm happy to bring this. I renew my motion to send this bill to the General Register.
Okay. Representative Lehman renews her motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Yep. Is there anything I should announce? We have a pretty full agenda. Looks like I think it's been put out on Tuesday. It's possible bills may get added. I'll try to give as much notice to whenever that happens as possible. Thursday will probably be similar. I would expect we may well have a meeting on next Friday as well. So we'll probably go Tuesday and Thursday until 12:30 and may reconvene in the evening. So with that, if there's no questions, we are adjourned.